This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a weekend, back into a Monday, back from the weekend. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really great. How's everybody doing?
Hey, we got some rain in Texas.
We did.
That's not bad for August.
Thunderstorms and rain, I'll take it for August 1st now as we move into August 2nd.
Well, welcome to August.
Yeah, right.
Wow. We'll start out.
I'm really concerned about AOC. I do believe that she is delusional. She was talking about the eviction.
Moratorium.
The moratorium, which ended. Mm-hmm. On July 30th, and she blamed not just Republicans, but conservative Democrats. So the fact that she believes
that there are conservative Democrats.
See, he finishes my sentences.
Yeah.
He knows exactly. I don't even go.
Well, it's hard to even find conservative Republicans. So let's be clear. Conservative Democrats.
Who would the conservative Democrats be?
Well, compared to her, Barack Obama.
Okay. So
it's all relative.
All right.
Yes.
You're finishing every sentence of mine.
Yeah. It's all relative. Yeah. Barack Obama is far, far right compared to her.
So, I saw that one and I just started laughing. We got a great show ahead. The infrastructure bill apparently done with 2,700 pages.
So they do the opposite of what you and I have been begging them to do. Instead of working less, which means they would spend less of our money, we wanted them to work. We got it down to, I think, 1 hour a week. We think that both the House and the Senate should only work 1 hour a week. And, of course, they didn't listen to us. They went opposite, and they did a rare Sunday session. In order to get this thing done, this heaping, steaming pile of kicking the door open to reconciliation. It's not infrastructure. Don't pay attention to anything they're talking about over the next few days as they, well, we came to an agreement. Yeah, really. Collins, Romney, and all the other far, what would I say, far less than conservative Republicans.
We can say that for Republicans now.
Yeah, right. Oh, you know, I mean, I guess you could say conservative Democrats, Romney and Collins. There you go. All right.
Also coming up on the show, stats on the Delta variant. What are the actual stats? Oh, that's the other thing that you and I were talking about. The White House over the weekend made it clear they are upset about alarmist Delta variant coverage.
Is that because they're jealous that it's outdoing what the president is doing? He wants to be the alarmist and the only alarmist?
It's a mess.
It's bizarre.
It's a mess up there.
He's the one that said Facebook is killing people.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're worried about alarmists.
We'll get more to that. Could skyrocketing bacon prices and the possibility of huge shortages be the last straw in California? You saw that story yesterday.
It's because for those that don't know, after the first of the year, there are new laws that go into effect in California with chicken and egg producers and pork producers as well that require whatever the source is, whatever the farm is that's supplying it, must have ample room for breeding. And the chicken industry has said, yeah, we believe we're going to be able to meet this by the end of the year. So eggs and chicken likely won't be affected going into next year. The pork producers, only 4% of them right now meet the standard.
Yep.
And that means 96% of them, and they say they don't know how they will meet the standard. And when you look at that, and the majority of that comes from one state going into California. It comes from Iowa. And the pork producers of Iowa are going, what in the world are we going to do? You know, I mean, how do you, unless the state goes in and says, well, we'll do a short-term exemption or something like that. I don't know. Or there's a lawsuit, which there could be. I don't know where the lawsuit goes. You know, we could have an interesting conversation about the producers, the pork producers in this case, suing the state of California. But you get down to the pork products. And you're getting down to the mom-and-pop diners. You're getting down to, and then all the way up to the massive fast food chain companies who apparently bacon goes on everything now. I mean, there's a, everybody's got a bacon burger or 9 or 10 bacon burgers, and you put it on chicken sandwiches. It's everywhere. And it is a money producer. I mean, there is this emotional tie to bacon. As a nation, we love our bacon. But in California, someone was floating the idea of roasted banana peel. Shut up. Stop talking.
Doesn't that get you high?
Yeah, probably. Which is probably how they came up with the idea of putting it on a sandwich. Because they're stoned out of their minds. You would have to be to think that that could replace bacon.
And I guess 15% of the bacon consumption in the United States comes from California.
Right, yes. So
that's
right,
the challenge you're facing.
And it's, and you know, if you go, and I'll be there here in about 5 weeks or so on vacation. And when you go in, I mean, it's just like everywhere, but the trendy restaurants, you know, they have their own take on this and that, but I mean, bacon's all over the menu. And pork, of course, is all over the menu.
Because this isn't just bacon, this is
no,
all pork
it's,
products.
It's pork,
right.
Yep. And so the pork producers are looking at this going, we don't know how we would meet, even get close to meeting this standard, because you have to take a look at it. It gets down to the acreage and then management, too, of that, you know, when you're producing a product like that, you're going to have to micromanage it, which means the state of California would be involved in, I guess, sending representatives to or having a, maybe even a third party that would govern this to certify. And, you know, I'm all for if a company, if a producer of, you know, a product like that wants to come out and say, hey, like it was, what, free range chicken back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot, and there was one company, and I saw the online ad for them a few years ago, and it was the guy who started the company, and it was all about free range chickens and the whole thing, and he, it was very humorous, and but it was his selling point, it was his decision, and for him, he believed his company was going to, of course, profit from that. You're going to probably pay more. It's like grass fed beef and mm-hmm. everything else. If you want to create that and you want to have that as policy, that's one thing. But, you know, ultimately, when you talk about, you know, everybody going after this and taking on this whole, well, it's cruel to the animals. You understand they're only in that situation so we can eat them. We're going to slaughter them and eat them. Now, I'm not for torturing an animal in that process. I believe in a very swift and painless execution of that animal, but I am a meat eater and I'm not going to apologize for that ever. And it's not a, you know, the thing is that it's not a short-term deal. If California enacts this kind of policy, expect other states to do the same. And what they'll be doing is they'll be killing the profits for those mom and pop and large companies that serve these products.
Did you see that the cost, I don't have the story in front of me here, so I'm doing this from memory. The cost of a pound of bacon would go up from like somewhere, I think it was like somewhere between $6.50 and $6.70 for, you know, basically a package of bacon to over $9.
Oh, easy. Yeah, I think that's a good, I saw those numbers and I think that's a conservative estimate. I really do. You know, to the pork producers in Iowa, all of us in free states will do our best to eat more of your product. I love it. In fact, I was just in Iowa at the Walcott Trucker Show a few 2 weeks ago, and the pork chop tent is the most one of the most popular places at the Iowa 80 during that 3 days. The Iowa pork producers show up, and man, they got a great product or number of products across the board. So we'll do what we can to make that up. But when you have a massive state, well, the massive state of California, enact a policy like this, if it survives court challenges, it's going to keep going. You're going to see this spread along the West Coast.
Yeah, because what they say is it could skyrocket 60-70%.
Yeah.
In bacon prices, and
right.
You're talking about a state where gasoline is now in most places way over $4. So the average gasoline price is $1.20 greater. I've got a couple of friends that have, besides Phil Mickelson, really, really want to leave California, and they just say the prices, if you live anywhere near a major city, the prices are unbelievable.
Yeah,
that right. You can make an incredible salary and not be able to afford the cost of living in California right now. They said it's really it's to the point where these people are all actively looking to get out of California.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends that they're a couple, in fact, and they just made the move. They sold their house and they had just bought their house a few years ago. They had been living in apartments with roommates, by the way, as a couple, no kids, but they were sharing an apartment with other couples, other roommates, and then they were able to finance their own house. And then everything else just compounded, and they said, we just can't survive the cost of California anymore. And they left.
And speaking of that, I think it was Wall Street Journal. We'll get to I just thought about this now. It'd be good to tie it in. An analysis of the actual issues in California, something that you and I have talked about before.
Yeah.
Based on the election last year of Biden winning so big in California, but on the propositions, they look like Oklahoma, the way that they voted on many of these propositions, including turning down affirmative action, making it easier for the government to reverse Prop 9 on business so they couldn't increase the corporate taxes, the corporate property taxes there, which they sold that of the billion-dollar companies and the rich, and they couldn't sell it in California, among other propositions. But they go in and talk about how a lot of what the legislature has done is actually responsible for the number of people out there that disagree with what Newsom is doing.
Right.
A lot of it's based on what the legislature is doing, and so many of the repressive laws, along with COVID, COVID's there. And they did talk about that, and this is a great point. They talked about Larry Elder. They said, the Republicans have just been pounding on immigration and cultural issues. Said there's four or five or six other things that you can pound on.
Mm.
And they said that's why they believe Larry Elder is a great person to do it, because as a talk show host, he has articulated more than just those two issues.
Right.
And you and I have talked about this many times. One of the biggest problem with Republicans, the people agree with you on the damn issues.
Right.
Sell it.
Exactly. Exactly. And who better than a guy who's been in that position of doing that for many years and very capable of doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really interesting. So we'll get to that. The new mask mandates. By the way, I was in Florida over the weekend. And say, it's sort of like you go from I flew from free America to free America. And
I was in Illinois. Not so much. No, it was rural Illinois. It was different. I flew Chicago, but it was for the Shell super rigs. And but rural Illinois is much different.
Okay, so you didn't go for Lollapalooza, and the controversy with Lightfoot talking about all the restrictions that may be coming down, and then hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, no, I did not.
But it's funny because it's sort of like you hear all this stuff, and you're in Texas, and it's like, well, business as usual. You go to Florida, business as usual.
Right.
It's like people aren't even talking about the things like the mask mandates and things like that.
Mm.
It's really, it's incredible. And that is, it's the impact that hits me is culturally, it's just so much different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's true that the culture does dictate what the laws or the mindset of what people will accept in a repressive government.
Yeah.
Oh, and one of the things you saw down there now, they talking with my friends down there, they said, normally it's dead here.
Mm.
It's dead. It's the middle of summer.
Mm.
And it's mobbed everywhere, every restaurant.
Mm.
We walked through a parking lot, they were pointing out to me, look at all the New York license plates.
Yeah.
Look at all the California license plates.
Right.
Look at all the people that are here. They're not leaving. They're not going back. They don't want to go back because they want their you know, they want to be able to do what they can do here and be free to move about.
Right.
And really, was it, that was the one thing that really, when talking to my Florida friends, that they were telling me about this past weekend, that it's just people aren't leaving. Normally it's dead, and it's not dead.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just my general assessment, since you and I haven't talked because you were out Thursday and Friday of last week, and it seems to me, you know, the miscommunication coming from the White House. I mean, it was just a zoo at the end of last week when it came to mask mandates and what was going on, to the Biden administration coming out and saying, we need to stop this alarmist reporting on the Delta variant, which again just was hilarious. But it seems to me what the administration and other Democrats are now worried about is the fact that if you lock down now, because I think that actually they want to lock down, and I think the panic came. I could be wrong, but I suspect when they saw the GDP numbers, when they look at the unemployment in many of these Democrat states, which are large states, New York and California are large states, and the fear is we can't even approach that because that will affect the stock market and that will affect business. So it's not when you look at even when AOC complaining against the conservative Democrats that don't exist, I don't. When it comes to the eviction moratorium, it's got nothing to do with being conservative. She's delusional because there are no conservative Democrats right now in Congress or in the White House. I really think it's the fear that the real fear that they have, which tempers everything they do, that they're in power now. And if they start locking down or scare the stock market or whatever,
they're going to have to own it.
Nobody else can own it except them.
Well, you saw that Dr. Propaganda was out on the Sunday morning shows, Fauci over the weekend, and saying yesterday morning, talking about how he doesn't see a need for a shutdown because of the numbers on the vaccinations. He said, you know, no, we're at the point now that the spread might worsen, but the effect of the spread ultimately in serious illnesses and hospitalizations is not going to be a great concern because that's happening primarily with the unvaccinated. So he was pushing the fact that he doesn't see another shutdown or a need for a shutdown. And I thought if they've got him out talking like that, then they're worried right now about the economy, and they should be. Here's your forecast.
As we begin August, we'll see cooler temperatures for the most part for a good chunk of the U.S., continued showers and thunderstorms for the southern plains this morning into late this afternoon will continue from Texas over to Florida and into the Carolinas, where things could get rather rocky today for some potential severe weather in the form of thunderstorms, hail, and some damaging winds. Monsoonal flow, moisture moving in from the south into Arizona and New Mexico continues today. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho will also experience rain. Burn scars in the Pacific Northwest will be especially vulnerable to flooding. Dry lightning in Oregon could initiate new fires. We're under high pressure and sunny skies for areas from the Dakotas into the Great Lakes, most of the Midwest, and into the Mid-Atlantic. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
They created this mess. They can fix it. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
We can fix it.
Yeah, that's a ticket.
Yeah.
Good morning, Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So this over the weekend, a spokesperson for the Biden administration's COVID-19 response team bashed both the New York Times and Washington Post Friday for alarmist tweets about the data that led the CDC to recommend the reimposition of mask mandates in much of the United States. The deputy director of strategic communications and engagement for the White House unit initially directed his anger at the Washington Post over their headline about a study of a COVID-19 outbreak among hundreds of people, most of them fully vaccinated, in Provincetown, Massachusetts over the July 4th weekend. Quote, vaccinated Republicans made up 3/4 of those infected with the massive Massachusetts COVID-19 outbreak. Pivotal CDC study finds, end of quote, reads the Post. The response from the White House, completely irresponsible. 3 days ago, the CDC made clear that vaccinated individuals represent a very small amount of the transmission occurring around the country. Virtually all hospitalizations and death continue to be among the unvaccinated, the White House said. Unreal, not to put that in context. Now, that's the White House going after the Washington Post.
Right.
Minutes later, they turned their anger on the New York Times tweet from Thursday night when the CDC data was initially leaked prior to its wider release on Friday. Breaking news, a Delta variant is as contagious as chickenpox and may be spread by vaccinated people as easily as the unvaccinated, an internal CDC report said, end of quote. White House response, vaccinated people do not transmit the virus at the same rate as unvaccinated people, and if you fail to include that context, you're doing it wrong. Wow. Now, my question is, were those stories banned from Facebook and Twitter?
Ah, right. The truth deciders.
And then you had, what was it? Here it is. The public health expert, Lena Wen, said that President Biden declared victory too soon over the coronavirus pandemic. And the worry from the White House is, and the worry from other Democrat leaders is, this is going in the way of instilling the panic that could tank the stock market again.
Yep.
Have, you know, you saw the talk of lockdowns late last week, and then the pushback, no lockdowns. Their messaging, you know, and here's, I'm sure the New York Times and New York Post is and other liberal media is saying to themselves, why is the White House so angry? They've been promoting panic for the longest time.
Right.
They've been promoting the fact, it was the president, remember, July 4th, we may be able to get together.
Right, yes.
It was
maybe,
the president.
If you're fully vaccinated, maybe.
It was a president. Facebook is killing people.
Right. He's the alarmist in chief.
Well, and here's the other thing, you know, and you and I talked a little bit about this before you left last week, but the twofold problem on the whole Delta variant and the whole mask mandate is, and I think it was Reason magazine that did this. They said, what's happening here, and it's not going to be successful, is number one, if you're encouraging people to get vaccines by telling them that the vaccines aren't effective.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's not going to help increase that rate. The other point is that when you do that, what you've actually done, you've actually sent out the message that the people that have done what the government has told them all along is the responsible and right thing to do, which is to get the vaccine, are now responsible and have to sacrifice for people who have not gotten the vaccine and have not done the right thing by the government standard. And so those who are punished are the people that have done the right thing in order to save the people that have done the wrong thing by the government standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing is the whole recommendation of the masks for children. Because if you're recommending that everybody wear masks, especially if you're around children and at schools and everything else, because they cannot be infected, that by that standard, Because you and I went through a couple of weeks ago, we went through the number of flu deaths of young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you, if you're going to do that, if you're going to lock down, or excuse me, not lock down, if you're going to have mask mandates in schools where everybody has to be masked, then what you're saying is by that standard that we must mask up at schools forever.
Yes.
Forever, because if it's about saving a child's life, the flu kills more. So children must be permanently, and those who teach at schools and in your home around your children, everybody has to be masked everywhere in order to protect the children. If that's the standard, then it has to be across the board all the time for the common cold, for the flu, for everything. If you're going by the standard that they're setting right now as to why children must wear masks in the Delta variant.
Right. And you didn't include cooties.
Well, no, I did bring that up over the weekend to a couple of friends, though.
Yeah. Imagine that. Cooties would be gone. And what is a childhood without cooties?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a mere existence.
So, that's where they are. But they sit there and they say, we cannot be creating this panic, but yet you create the panic by stating that all kids in schools must wear masks.
Yes.
And so their messaging is just all over the place. They can't get a consistent message for one day at the White House.
No, it's because, and look, it's real simple right now that we knew that something would have to give. We knew they would love to have shutdowns. They would love to have that control because they would love to be justified in a great deal of spending. But also it gets them closer to controlling the means of production in many industries. Think about what's going on right now. If industry is hurting, well, only the government then can step in, right? So government controlling the means of production, government controlling the capital, well, there you have communism. It gets them greater control. Oh, by the way, don't fear, because this time, see, we're the United States. The United States will get communism right.
But the problem is, and you have that, you know, from Democrats, until they realize that it's hitting against real world economics
and reality sets in.
It's like, oh, the what we wish to do to the economy isn't going. We need to slow it up a little bit because we can't affect the. Well, you are going to affect the economy by putting in socialistic practices or as far as communistic practices when it comes to the Green New Deal and the belief that the business should be nationalized and owned by the government, as you would have to do if you put through the Green New Deal.
Right.
And so that's the problem they're finding. Well, wait a minute. We want socialism, but not if it affects the economy.
Right. Well, the thing is that there has to be, you know, at that point, there has to be the this is what they talked about with healthcare. We can't get to a single-payer system until we break the current employer-based system that we have. And the problem is that you break one, well, there's a lot of people out there on a drifting raft, if not worse, drowning in between until the government can step in, right? Mm-hmm. Now you expand that out to the entire economy and industry as a whole and capitalism. And what would be the fall of capitalism, and they're really trying, but the problem is the real pain is staggering. It's devastating, and people die as a result.
And the other problem that they face is the problem we talked about last week. I know New York Post had an editorial, Miranda Devine, on it, about the fact that the administration has no credibility because of the southern border.
Right. That's absolutely true.
By putting the mask mandate, or not the mask mandate, by not allowing vaccinated people into the United States, and it was a big deal early last week when they said, nope, not even in Canada can you have vaccinated people come in. And here we know it now. Without nobody is debating it. Nobody is not saying it's happening. Here's what's from the New York Post. On one hand, the Biden administration is reimposing mask mandates and burdensome health restrictions we thought we had left behind. On the other hand, it is knowingly ushering in millions of illegal immigrants. I don't know if it's millions. She writes millions of illegal immigrants with infected COVID and not even testing them or keeping track of where they go. The Department of Homeland Secretary has testified to that fact. They are put on buses and planes and covertly shipped around the country to unsuspecting communities in violation of CDC guidelines the rest of us have to follow. If you're a law-abiding citizen arriving at an American airport, even if you are fully vaccinated, you have to produce a negative COVID test result from the past 1 to 3 days, or you won't be allowed in, even if you're vaccinated. But at the southern border, you can wander across coughing and sneezing, and they'll give you a welcome pack and send you on your way to spread the disease. The only reason we know it's been happening is La Jolla, Texas. And it's because of the local police department issued a public health warning on Facebook last week about sick, illegal immigrants wandering around without masks. A concerned citizen flagged down a police officer and complained about the family of migrants in a local Whataburger who were coughing and sneezing without covering their mouths and not wearing masks. The Whataburger, the family told the officer they had been apprehended by Border Patrol days prior and were released because they were sick with COVID-19.
Mm.
You know, you see this, and this is the thing. You want something that has the ability, not that Biden's numbers haven't been tanking, but you want them to tank big time. This story is slowly getting out there. The mainstream media really won't touch it because they can't defend it. But this is one of the biggest problems that they have. And as we stated last week, the Biden administration does not care if Americans die of COVID. If they did, they would stop this, and they will not do that.
Nope. It goes back to the beginning of this surge. This surge was happening during COVID, and you know, the media ignored it. And then all of a sudden, when you start looking at this, because it was really during the peak at the surge at the beginning of this year was happening, and it was the peak of hospitalizations, and it was a result of this president, who is a candidate, invited everyone to come here. And to the extent of, hey, if you were deported during Trump years, come on back. We'll fix that.
Yep.
It wasn't just people who hadn't come here yet. Through their policy, they were inviting individuals to come here during the peak of a pandemic. And by the way, that's not being an alarmist. That's being honest.
Well, I, again, there's no alarmism in the fact that when you look at the Canadian border or other borders, that foreign nationals cannot come in while vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's not the policy at the southern border. We know
right.
that.
Right.
And even if it was the policy, because he invited them in and because of the mass surge at the border, we know thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands have been come into the country illegally again and are here, and we haven't been able to monitor them. And the resources are strained at the southern border because the president invited illegal immigrants to come to the United States.
Yep.
Nobody is debating that.
Nope.
They won't talk about it, the mainstream media. It doesn't mean it's not happening.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90. Red Eye story out there about more West Texas Border Patrol agents testing positive for COVID-19. And actually, some of the actual numbers about the Delta variant and the mess going on here at the White House. Plus, we'll get to the infrastructure bill, which apparently has enough Republicans now to pass it. And then it's at that point, then what happens with the reconciliation bill? Kyrsten Sinema came out last week and said she won't vote for the $3.5 trillion, but does that mean she won't vote for the $3.4 trillion or
right.
the $3.3 trillion,
right,
which just changed the number, even if the spending is a lot more, as we have seen from the analysis from the group, the group that's responsible responsible budget negotiations or something. That's the name of the group out there that came out and said, no, you're not going to be spending $3.5 trillion. You're going to be spending an additional over $5 trillion on this. So the numbers really mean squat.
Yeah,
what they propose it as. So they simply propose it as a 3.3, and she and Manchin jump on board. And the Democrats get everything that they want and totally play on the foolish Republicans here.
Right. Yeah. Don't be surprised to see, oh, look, here's $500 billion to spend in Arizona. Oh, magically.
Yeah.
A mind has changed.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here this morning. So just looking here, the Wall Street Journal, some numbers on the Delta variant.
All right.
And they go to the CDC estimates are about 35,000 symptomatic infections among 162 million vaccinated Americans a week. As cases have increased nationwide, so a breakthrough infections, that's to be expected. But recent studies still show the vaccines 88% protective against symptomatic illness and 96% against hospitalization and death. Vaccinated people make up a larger share of the hospitalized population and deaths than in the winter. That's because most older people who are at higher risk have been vaccinated and vaccines aren't 100% effective. This doesn't mean that vaccines don't prevent severe illness. The vast majority of people who are hospitalized are unvaccinated. Real-world evidence from hospitals indicate the vaccines are only about 87% preventative against hospitalizations. That's lower than published studies, but this may be because the vaccines are less protective against some groups. For example, if you have some immune system problems, it's only 59% effective and only 85% against severe illness among nursing home residents. An important footnote, vaccines are even more protective in nursing homes where a larger share of the population are vaccinated. That's why it's important for the nursing home workers to be vaccinated. The CDC evidence suggests Delta is more than twice as transmissible as the original virus strain, akin to the chickenpox, which is why cases are rising even in places with relatively high vaccination rates. But don't freak out. Like the CDC, vaccines are still very protective. Evidence indicates a Delta variant replicates much faster and produces a higher viral load in respiratory passages that allow it to spread more. There's also some evidence that people infected with Delta are contagious for longer. It's still uncertain whether the breakthrough Delta cases can transmit the virus as much as unvaccinated people do. So there you go. As they've said, though, the virus is never going to be eradicated. Is a conclusion that that they've come to. It will eventually become endemic, and the public health goal is to protect people from getting severely ill. But no matter what, it's going to continue to evolve and spread. And so we've said this in the very beginning. Will vaccines be around for a while? Yeah, they will. Will boosters be around for a while? Yeah, they will. Might you have to get a booster every year for COVID? Yeah, you might.
And will natural immunity play a big part of it? The answer is yes.
Yes.
You know, and depending on how it evolves, and no one really can make that prediction and tell you where it's going to be in 3 to 5 years or 20 years or 100 years. But this does happen with viruses, including the flu. And some years it's more deadly. Other years it's not. And the human body is resilient. And so you'll see pretty much what you've been seeing with the flu and other viruses where there is a vaccine available, and that is those who believe they're most at risk certainly are going to be the ones who want to jump out in front of it and stay vaccinated, get vaccinated, and do whatever their doctor is advising they do. And you'll have others who have never gotten a flu shot and probably won't ever get a flu shot.
You and I
said, and may never get the flu.
It was obvious from the very beginning on this, which is why when, and we can go back to specific dates, that when Cuomo put in his executive order on March 25th, March 26th, which was the next available time that we were on the air, we said this is unbelievable. We couldn't believe what was going on because at that point, you knew that the elderly were the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the elderly, those with underlying conditions, we know who the most vulnerable is. That's never changed. The big mistake from day one, and this is, I think, what you and I have said, what many others have said, should have been the massive focus should have been on those that are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been the massive focus. We spent, you know, we've spent trillions of dollars to lock down an entire society when you look at the numbers out there, there is no statistical variation of, you know, whether you look at Florida or the average of other states, you can't look at it and say, well, this worked and the masks worked and this worked and the lockdowns worked.
Right.
You can't make that case. And the thing that gives Florida extra credibility is their greater percentage of senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they did. It should have been an effort to completely and totally focus it on those that are vulnerable. But still we don't get it because still you've got the federal government. Still you've got the states. Now you've got some of the teachers unions coming out saying, Mom, maybe it's time just to close schools again.
Right.
When children have never been the problem with this, even if it's the Delta variant.
Right.
And if you do this for children and you say that adults need to wear masks because of the children, and then the children need to wear masks in school now because of this uptick, because of the Delta variant, then it means forever kids will be required to wear masks in school if you're following the standard that they're setting here for mandating masks.
Mm-hmm.
It will never end.
Yeah, no, and I could see that, and many on the left would be absolutely okay with that. Everybody mask up until the end of time. And by the way, when that happens, that is the stepping stone into getting back to the shutdowns. Because right now, this administration is looking at the GDP numbers, and what are they saying? Well, it doesn't, you know, they don't want a shutdown. They can't afford a shutdown. And the Democrats, the party, they can't afford a shutdown. Can you imagine if they got back to a shutdown this winter and then going into the midterm election season with the GDP numbers just tanking over and over again?
Well, when you've had a pro-shutdown culture come from liberalism and all of a sudden you have people that realize, oh, well, we didn't, you know, if the economy tanked during the Trump administration, that's fine. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's the problem that the Democrats will always have. They wish to promote socialism, Marxism, and Marxism until it affects the economy before an election.
Right.
And then we can't have that. Well, you can't have both. You can't have shutdowns and keep the GDP going. And so you've got the New York Times last week and the Washington Post with their, quote, alarmist stories that the White House is furious at. But it's the White House who has been proposing alarmist viewpoints all along.
Right. Well, it, you know, it expect to see this. What you'll see from the Democrats is they'll want to move to partial shutdowns, right? Okay, we'll limit the hours that a business can do, or we'll limit the kids' exposure in schools. We won't have this these types of gatherings anymore. We won't have that type of gathering anymore. The problem with that is because they've always been about the slow approach. Of course, post-COVID and post-identity politics, the slow approach, they didn't care about. You look at an AOC, if she were making decisions, we would have people's rent fully paid for forever.
Yeah.
Nobody would get evicted ever. Because if you can keep the eviction moratorium going, then you could then get to the point of property rights just going out the door completely.
Well, that's another thing that we will be bringing up here, because you think about it. We've been told that the recession ended
mm-hmm.
in April of 2020.
Right.
You had the crash in every single month. Mm. That means the GDP has either remained the same or increased.
Right.
Or you haven't had four consecutive months of it. But from what I can see from last April, it's gone up. It crashed big time.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I look at it, it wasn't a recession. It was that was depression numbers that you
depression
saw there.
Territory in terms of
right.
the numbers, yes.
In terms of maybe not the length of time, but in
right.
terms of the actual numbers.
Right.
So it's going up. And so we're talking about the fact that ended. The decrease in the economy ended in April of 2020. We are now to August of 2021. You're talking way over a year later, and the Democrats still want to have an eviction moratorium so people don't have to pay their rent.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to buy that.
No. Nope.
And they still, it's like, well, what's the purpose of it? Well, we should keep it till next March. You kidding me? Talking about 2 years?
Well, because...
Because if that's the standard, then every single recession, we should have an eviction moratorium.
Again, which was my point, is that you're not going to, again, get away from that because of the fact that if people are hurting, then the government needs to step in a massive way, which is basically denying the rights of the property owner.
Yeah.
And the only way around that, the only way to quiet the property owner in a legal way is to do what? Spend more money paying them. So basically, you're just paying people's housing costs until the end of time. We saw that. We saw it last year. People shouldn't be burdened with rent.
The interesting thing is I know you saw it when you were gone, that the poll that was done that shows that the majority of Americans, and it's like 60% of Americans, believe that the child tax credit should end.
Right.
It's too much.
Right.
And we were like, wow, don't tell me, because Eric and I would be completely pleased if mm-hmm. this country is starting to move in a fiscally conservative direction.
Right.
Same thing with inflation. They blame the Biden administration for it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Well, because it's going to hit. There is no free ride. Believing that you're not going to get hit because you're getting free money, you're getting your rent paid, whatever it might be, is false, because you are going to take that, whether it's your earned money or government money coming to you, you've got to take that, and there's less of it in terms of its buying power. It's that simple. When inflation hits as hard as it's hitting, that wouldn't end if we're going to keep throwing money and expect reconciliation. If it were to pass, it would do the same thing. The inflation numbers that would be hitting in the wake of something like that passing, more and more spending. And this doesn't even account for the fact that there are people in industries, including the service industry, that don't want to go back to the long hours for the pay that they were getting. They would rather train and do something else. And the job matching issue that they have right now, we talked about several weeks ago, and getting people back to work is also a huge hit on inflation. You're not going to cure those things overnight. You're certainly not going to cure them before November of next year.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on defensive driving. Tire blowout. Tire blowouts happen quickly, so your reaction time also needs to be quick. That's why it's important to be prepared. When a tire blowout happens, your instincts may be to hit the brakes. In fact, you want to add power to keep your vehicle stable instead. Hitting the brakes will cause your vehicle to move towards the side of your blown tire. Adding power gives you more control of your vehicle to avoid any further damages. Once you have directional control, slowly reduce your speed and carefully approach the side of the road. After you're safely pulled over, then it's time to follow the necessary safety procedures to address your disabled vehicle. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. When you look at everything that's happened over the last few days with the White House coming out and screaming at the New York Times and the Washington Post and accusing them of alarmist stories that just aren't true, mm-hmm. that they're putting out misinformation on the Delta variant, mm-hmm. you have the ultimate in the liberal circular firing squad, do you not?
Yeah.
And not only that, but the media, and that's why I think they're probably shocked. They go, wait a minute. Doing panic for all this is what the White House has been doing.
Yeah.
And why are they reversing here?
This is their game.
And so just as reading Jim Garrity's column about he was listening, to different media outlets and reading, and he talked about Bloomberg Radio, and he says the announcer warned that the Lollapalooza concert series in Chicago could turn into COVID-palooza. The Independent reports photos of huge unmasked crowds are spurring fears that the music festival could become a COVID-19 super spreader event. The Chicago Sun-Times declares, now ahead comes the major COVID-19 outbreak, super spreader style. That's not just the likely outcome of Chicago's just concluded four-day music festival. It is a certainty. Except, as Garrity writes, more than 90% of attendees showed proof of vaccination on the first day. 8% showed proof of a negative COVID-19 test within the past 72 hours. About 600 people were turned away because they didn't bring either. Masks were either recommended in the indoor spaces on the first 2 days and required on the second 2 days of the four-day festival, but no restriction applied to the outdoor spaces. Because that's fine. What are you supposed to do? Is it possible someone entered who had an inaccurate test result? Sure. All testing systems are imperfect and run a small risk of false negatives and false positives. Is it possible someone accurately tested negative but subsequently caught the virus? Sure. The test can only tell you if you're infected at the time of the test. Is it possible people who are vaccinated will catch the virus from anyone who slipped through? Yes. Could the concert lead to an increase in some cases? Yes, but a large increase in cases does not mean a large increase in people getting sick. Mm. But it's the whole point of the liberal circular firing squad here.
Yeah.
And the fact is the media has been obsessed with the number of cases, not the impact that the disease has in serious hospitalizations and deaths, which we believe the focus always should have been on, and the vulnerable groups that exist out there. And I'm going to guess that the majority of the people at Lollapalooza, 90% who were vaccinated, the other 8% showed a negative test in the last 72 hours. I don't think that the majority of those people that are going there are probably the ones that are most vulnerable,
right,
to the virus.
Right.
But that's what, and so you've got this going on, and at the same time, there it is. More West Texas Border Patrol agents test positive for COVID-19. 3 more Border Patrol agents working at the Eagle Pass, Texas Processing Center tested positive for COVID-19 over the weekend. According to a source working under the umbrella of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the agents were assigned to process migrants apprehended in the Del Rio sector in a soft-sided structure that is currently holding double its rated capacity. And so more stories coming out each and every day about the southern border, and how the administration treats that completely differently. And I really wonder when the media will finally look at that and say if COVID is their obsession still, as we see that it is.
You want to see a super spreader? There you have it.
Yeah.
And they completely ignore the problem.
By windmills and solar panels. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So here we go. The infrastructure bill has been introduced into Congress, 2,700 pages. No one will be able to read it before they have a vote on it.
Well, they can't, because right now it's still steaming. The heaping, steaming pile that it is, because it is the huge boot that's going to kick open the door to reconciliation. We'll see where those Democrats go, though, on reconciliation. It won't be $3.6 trillion. We know it's long term because the projections are off. The breakdown is over $5 trillion is what it will cost taxpayers. And that is insane when you think about that kind of number. That's reconciliation alone. That doesn't even start to cover everything we've spent in the wake of COVID. And that kind of spending can't continue. If they get reconciliation done, I don't know what inflation will look like next year. I don't know what the economy will look like, but someone show me, unless there's a huge chunk of that, and this could be the case, that ultimately whatever is in reconciliation, part of it is going to be, again, shoving money into an economy to falsely prop it up just long enough to get them to November of next year. And I don't know. I look at it as, and I think the market will look at it as exactly what it is, and that is a debt load that is quickly becoming far too big. By the way, it became that, in our opinion, long ago. But we're getting closer to the point of not being able to service the interest on the debt.
Well, especially when interest rates will have to eventually go up.
And they will, yes.
You can't have what the Fed is doing. The recognition last week, and I found it fascinating, the number of polls out there that show that the American public, just like the border, when the administration was trying to say that the problem with the border was Trump, well, nobody bought it. The vast majority of Americans blame Biden for the border, as they should. When it comes to inflation, it was interesting that as the president last week was out there touting the fact that all this spending will actually help reduce inflation, the American public, again, by numbers of, 60% were saying no. They're very, very concerned about inflation, and they blame the president for inflation. When you see that the president's declining numbers, there are reasons for that. And so the fact is, even as more people get to work, even as the GDP goes up, even as there's more money being paid for jobs out there, it's being eaten up faster by inflation than the raises can come in. And so people feel that. It's when you see, and I know that I see it when I go out there. I see the increasing prices out there. I can't imagine living in California. You and I will get to the story about the whole all the pork products out there, and the fact that because of California law, for humanitarian reasons for animals and breeding, could make it so you won't be able to find bacon in California, or could skyrocket to maybe up to $10 a pound for that. And then you brought this up, Eric. You brought up the very serious situation. Forget about bacon, pepperoni.
Well, the number one pizza is pepperoni pizza. And so you look at whether it is the added cost or the drop in supply, or both. I mean, the drop in supply, of course, would add the cost. The regulation would add to the cost astronomically. But even if they could just overcome the supply issue and do that by passing it along, the cost to the consumer, then imagine what a pepperoni pizza would cost. It's mind-boggling when you start thinking about all the different products, pork products that are going to be affected. But the economy in California and how it will be affected. USA Today focused, and I think I'm not sure, but I think they got this from a television station in Iowa, a news group in Iowa, where most of the pork comes from in terms of California. But they focused on the owner of a diner, and she said, look, bacon, eggs, and hash brown, that's our number one seller. And this is going to be devastating to us. And because it's
that was in San Francisco, I believe.
The diner. But the coverage came, I think, from a station, originally a station in Iowa. I know that there was coverage through USA Today. I'd have to go back and make sure I get proper credit. But what are the two choices on a breakfast platter? Bacon or sausage? Mm-hmm. Either way. You know, you're going to run into an added cost for these. And we may kind of scoff at it as something as mundane or insignificant. But the fact of the matter is it is a massive chunk of the restaurant profitability is being able to focus on those. And the fast food chains have done this to a large extent. And it's almost an emotional buy for people as soon as they put bacon on whatever product they were selling before.
So when you look at the fact that the public, and that's just what, that the bacon, we're getting into the story specifically, if you haven't heard it, in California, coming up in just a little bit. But overall, we use that as an example of the inflation that's happening. The public recognizes it. Mm-hmm. When you see the administration can't hide it any longer. And then everything, when you had the liberal circular firing squad, when you've got this infrastructure bill that people believe, when you have a number of things, when you have the Democrats who are just, the child tax credit, they're like, we're going to win because of this. And 60% of Americans come out already and say, no, it's going too far. Remember, it just began.
Yeah.
It just began. And they're like, no, this is going too far. We're spending too much money. And Americans actually, and this was the thing that really we were hoping last week, we just pray, I hope I'm completely wrong, and that I don't think I've been wrong the last couple of years, but I hope I'm wrong in the fact that I didn't see the fact that Americans actually would be would be concerned about our fiscal situation. If they are, yeehaw, I will be the happiest person alive. But it does seem the polls show that they do have a grasp on the fact of how inflation happens. And the massive government spending, when they feel it, you can do massive government spending. And you still go into the stores and you see the prices of everything has increased. You see gasoline has increased. You see that rent is increasing. You see that housing is increasing. You see that to buy a car is increasing. And then you've got the liberal circular firing squad now on the Delta variant, where the White House is going crazy saying the alarmism from the people that are have been experts on alarmism the first 6 months of their administration is just it shows you the fact that there is some panic out there as the reality of your policies are now coming to the forefront for many Americans out there. And so this whole bill of 2,700 pages that could lead, basically to the primer for reconciliation that could be a total of over $5 trillion in spending, not the 3.5 that they're talking about, but from the analysis saying, no, this would increase spending in future budgets because it would continue these programs that would not end and it would accelerate to $5 trillion. And this is on top of already a $4 trillion that we spend each and every year. Remember, our budget is, a little over $4 trillion, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep spending more and more and more and more. But there seems to be a recognition by Americans that this causes inflation. And I'm amazed, because we haven't had inflation for a while, that concern seems to be increasing and seems to be a dominant part of people's lives right now.
Yeah, I think it's, look, we became very frugal during COVID. A lot of people, because of their habits, changed and their pay changed. But if they were working from home, they weren't spending money on eating out as much at lunch, and they were cooking more at home. So when you go back to the grocery store and you're spending more in the grocery store, you see that inflation hit. You see those prices go up, and you're wondering why. Well, wait a minute, my cart's not as full as it was just months ago, yet I'm paying more. That's a very real situation, and it is, I guess, a bit surprising that people are taking note of it. But when I think you factor in everything that people, in terms of their spending habits, everything that has changed, then it shouldn't be surprising at all. And I think, again, we get to the point of reconciliation wherever the Democrats go on this, if they get it done. I fear that kind of inflation and how hard it would hit and for how long.
We'll look at some of the things that are apparently in the bill coming up here. Mm. But again, I mean, it's impossible for us to read the 27. It was funny because a couple of news sites, here it is if you wish to read it. And I'm thinking, oh, how did you, 2,700 pages?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, we'll get back to you next year
right.
at this time.
Right. And it'll change three times during that time.
But there's already been some analysis on it. And we'll get to that and more coming up, plus your calls and comments, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just reading this from Breitbart that got an early version of the actual bill that was actually leaked to them. It says, most notably, the bill contains a large carve-out for an Alaska highway that would likely benefit Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
Hmm.
This because they looked at, okay, what's in this bill that would benefit Republicans?
Right.
Because why would they be passing this, as you had said earlier?
Of course.
The bill also contains funding for high-priority corridors on the national highway system, including the United States Route 421 from the interchange with Interstate Route 85 in Greensboro, North Carolina, to Interstate 90 to the interchange at Interstate 95 in Dunn, North Carolina. That provision appears to benefit Senators Tom Tillis and Richard Burr, and their home state of North Carolina. Burr and Tillis were lead Republican negotiators on the bipartisan bill.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons Breitbart said that the sources leaked this to them is because this was done, you know, in not the normal process way, in secrecy. And this is where, and then it's going to be passed without senators having the ability to even read the bill.
Right.
Or the over 2,000-page bill also contained provisions that would help Senator Bill Cassidy's state of Louisiana, who is also a lead GOP negotiator on the bipartisan bill. The bill grants funding to the high-priority corridor that goes through Louisiana. Louisiana is also one of the 12 states that shall receive annual funds through the Mississippi River Gulf of Mexico Watershed Nutrient Task Force. And the bill also contains state-mandated carbon reduction programs and a whole bunch more. But that's just some of it there as people are doing some early reading on it.
Right. Yeah, well, we look for these gems. And then, first of all, you look for the people that are backing it and supporting it and helping it through. And then you look for those little nuggets of what's in it for them, right? Look, every senator is going to work for something for their state. But when it gets to the point of this being, and nobody can really deny this, the door opening for reconciliation, then, of course, you have to apply the same principles, which you would, and that is, all right, who are the holdouts on reconciliation? Well, Kyrsten Sinema. Great. How can we send a bunch of money to Arizona? How can we get her constituents on board for this spending? How can we, whatever it's going to be, this is exactly the tactic they will use. It's been in play for a long, long time. This is nothing new. It's not surprising. It's how you make the sausage, unless you live in California, because sausage will be banned. But this is how they make the sausage in Washington, D.C.
It's sausage in D.C. is never.
Yes.
It will never be banned.
No, it's never going to be banned. It's ugly. It's an ugly process, and it gets uglier. And so that's exactly what will happen after this. If they get this done, reconciliation is next. And look for that to happen.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream live. Get our app and put it on your phone, because our show is our podcast, so you can listen when you want and where. So go get it today. Eric, Wall Street Journal editorial page with just a ton of editorials in the last couple of days. All right, spot on. Remember, we've talked about in the Wall Street Journal All right, spot on. Remember, we've talked about in the Wall Street Journal.
With shields and swords and 1,000 men on the other side with shields and swords, and they're about to run at each other in the field. That's pretty much how it works over there at the Wall Street Journal.
But we've always thought that the opinion page actually does some great news stories.
To the extent that I'm willing to pay for it, which says a great deal about how I think of them.
Right. Especially when you're like, when you have to go through the news section. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Not that they still don't do good work in the news section. They do.
Yeah, they're still capable good of it. Yes. Yes.
It still is being done.
Sure.
But there it is, the Senate's infrastructure rush job. Mm. The press and public will have little time to inspect the details as we have said, this is the worst of how you do anything in Congress. This is what Congress is doing, and what these so-called bipartisan Republicans are doing is actually what the public views as the worst thing that Congress does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's write bills in secret, put them out before anybody can read it, and get it passed.
Right.
That you had the approval of a significant portion of the Republicans before a bill was even written.
Right.
And said senators have negotiated behind closed doors for weeks over details of their bipartisan infrastructure bill. And the legislative language was finally expected to be finished late Sunday. Schumer plans to jam the $1 trillion legislation through this week before most Americans will even know what's in it. Given the thoroughly bipartisan nature of the bill, I expect we will be able to consider all the relevant amendments and finish the bill in a matter of days, Schumer said, but the being bipartisan is hardly reassuring. The infrastructure bill is being written by a handful of senators, though you can be sure lobbyists are all over the details, if not actually in the room. On the outside are Americans who want to see for themselves the fine print on permitting reform, union wage rules, how the bill is being paid for, or language that favors political constituencies. Bipartisan bills often contain some of the worst special interest excesses. Mr. Schumer wants to rush the bill through so he can move on Bernie Sanders' $3.5 trillion budget resolution that he will again sprint through on a party line vote. He wants to pass both before the Senate's August recess. Amendments will be often will often be offered and voted on while the nation sleeps to meet this artificial deadline that is convenient for the political class, but not for informing the public. Both parties operate this way now. But it isn't the right way to run a democracy, and no wonder Americans hold Congress in such low regard. Right on.
Yep. This is something you and I have complained about for the longest time, and it does. It's... This attitude, this idea of wanting to be bipartisan. Do they have a party? You know, once they hammer things out, do they sit around and pat themselves on the back? They have some kind of weird pride from doing that.
Because
you're fighting for what you honestly believe, if you believe in anything, then I don't know how you wouldn't be proud of doing that. That kind of behavior is something to be proud of, regardless of what you believe. But tell me what you believe if you're willing to concede at every turn, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, or whoever it might be.
Well, you would ask, why didn't the Republicans come out and say, look, if we're going to pass this bill, we need to make it open. Because we've done this. We've done this basically in secret, and it's only been a few senators doing it. To be fair to our constituents, let us because it's 2,700 pages long. Mm. Remember, we're Republicans, and we're willing to justify our spending and be completely and totally transparent with it. So let's give the public and the media 3 weeks to analyze this.
Right,
we're willing to pass it. But if you want this passed, it's going to take 3 extra weeks for the transparency part of it, to rush it through so no Americans, and really, if it passes this week, the senators won't have time to read the bill.
No.
Then the bipartisan thing is a load of horse manure being served by Republicans.
Yep.
To their constituents. Nothing more. Because if you're not afraid of the bill, take a few weeks, 3 weeks, to let the American public and the media sift through it.
If it's worth it.
To see what public opinion is.
Right.
Nope. We're going to pass it. We're not going to allow the American public to see what's in it before we pass it. Hey, Republicans, you were complaining about, was it?
Nancy.
Yeah.
Got to pass it so we can see what's in it.
It was Obamacare?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We need to pass it so we can see what's in it. In this case, we need to pass it quickly so no one can see what's in it.
The Republicans doing the exact same. These Republicans who view themselves, people like Romney, of a higher moral standard than you
are nothing but the same political hacks that the American public has consistently shown disdain for because they actually don't care in doing what's best for the American public.
Right. And if the Republican Party isn't going to be more vocal about it, and I mean those outside of those individuals who are on board for this, the party itself, if they're not going to be more public about this, then you own whatever's handed to you at the midterm next year in 24 and beyond politically. If you get the loss, that's on you. You're not doing the will of the American people, then expect to lose. If you're not going to act responsibly, expect to lose.
You know, you and I've often stated when it comes out, well, the bipartisanship, and by the way, bipartisanship is sold to you by liberals.
Right. What does it mean? Does it mean that those Democrats are going to support more conservative causes? No.
I'm not saying Republicans don't do it because that's what you're seeing from Republicans right now.
Right.
My point was liberals love pushing the bipartisanship.
Yes, they're the ones because, that put the value. They believe there's political value in that. And the idiot Republicans who go along with that always are the ones to get burned. Because they get their, this is what happened. You reach across the aisle. Well, that means that the Republicans have to go further left, which they've been doing in recent years. So they're getting pretty good at doing that.
Well, the premise is always not how much should we negotiate to cut. It's always the compromise is how much of incredible spending are we going to do.
Right.
That's where it is, and that's where it's wrong to be. That's where it's wrong to begin with. So, you shake your head in this, but what the Senate is doing and what Republicans are in the lead, in my opinion, of doing, because they should have walked away, therefore they're in the lead, is everything that Americans consistently say they are against.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what the Republican, and then they sit up there. You'll see them sitting up there. If they didn't yesterday, I was traveling yesterday, so I didn't see if there was a press conference where they were all standing there.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll all be standing there, proud, patting each other on the back. We're doing the best for the American public. Horse manure.
That's a load of garbage. This is further damage. And by the way, once we get to this point, especially if reconciliation happens, it is the end. It's the end of the fight for fiscal conservatives who anyone who pretended to be a fiscal conservative. If we're not screaming at the top of our lungs at the end of 2008, we did just that to the point that we shut the phone banks down in D.C. over TARP 1. And now we're at a point, here we are, my gosh, 13 years later.
Yeah.
And if we don't shut the phones down again, especially when it comes to reconciliation, but honestly, this is the mechanism that makes reconciliation happen. And so if it happens, it's going to be on the backs of these Republicans who want you to believe they've done something noble, and somehow you must not understand and you aren't on the same, moral plane that they are.
And one of the things that's most reprehensible, and we have seen it in some of the drafts, is, and you'll, in all likelihood, I don't expect it to be any different, is when it comes to how to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And how to pay for it is they will exaggerate what the revenue is coming in from the government over a significant period of time. They will lie to the American public. They know it's false. They know the projection is way overboard. And when anybody in Congress lies, and that's, in my opinion, what they're doing when they do this, when they totally oversell the projections, because it never reaches it. You look at any bill, go back and look at the vast majority of spending bills and look how they say they're going to spend for it and see how many times they actually reach those goals of revenue coming in,
mm-hmm,
to the Treasury.
Right.
They don't.
Right.
But that's the way they lie to the American public in order to put the burden on our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren. And the Republicans are the ones, that's how you know it's bogus. That's how you know that they're trying to push through and get through the things that they wish to get done. And a lot of them in their own particular districts is a little payoff that they're getting in order to pass a bill like this,
mm-hmm,
and as far as I'm concerned, fudge the numbers of future revenue that comes in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's about, because right. It is about hiding. It is about not being completely honest with the American people. Those projections have been manipulated for the longest time. If you are, and our audience, I believe, is very good, well-trained at seeing right through that BS.
Yep.
But the problem is that we should have more outrage than there is right now. We should have a great deal more outrage and concern for what this means.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Stocks closed down. The Dow lost 0.4%. The S&P gave back 0.5%. And the Nasdaq was off 0.7%. Caterpillar stock fell after the company reported higher second quarter earnings, but also said rising costs will take a bite out of profits this summer. Caterpillar says prices for raw materials are higher, as are wages for its workers. The CDC now says the Delta variant of COVID spreads as easily as chickenpox, and vaccinated people infected with Delta may transmit it as easily as unvaccinated people can. The CDC now says even places that don't have high COVID transmission rates might consider requiring masks in indoor public spaces. And Kroger is now recommending masks for all employees and customers, regardless of their vaccination status. Walmart is requiring all of its U.S.-based corporate employees to be vaccinated. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in to the show coming up following the bottom of the hour, the GOP report on the COVID-19 origin.
Mm.
And this is looking at the possibility of clues that it could be a lab leak. It could be a lab leak. You
right.
know, that
right.
theory. Coming out of it. You know, the interesting thing is over the weekend, one of the things that you and I have officially wanted is for Fauci to come out and say, okay, what was, you know, what's the difference? You're saying that, that gain of function is different than Rand Paul is stating. And it was funny because I was looking at a couple of blogs this week and because I haven't got an official word from Fauci, but it was interesting as I'm going through some blogs and everything else in social media that it seems like what Fauci is saying gain of function is that's different from Rand Paul, because we wanted this in layperson terms,
right?
Is that what they're saying is gain of function is making a virus more dangerous, and that Rand Paul's definition of gain of function is taking an animal virus and manipulating it so it can jump to humans, which Rand Paul looks at, well, that's making it more dangerous because it wasn't affecting humans. And they're saying, well, technically, that's not the technical term of it. But from the very beginning, when we were talking about gain of function, it was being sold as a virus going from animals to human and humans manipulating that virus in order to do it. Well, the virus is more deadly to humans because originally it wasn't deadly at all.
Right.
And that's apparently what over the weekend from a bunch of different, you know, blogs and posts I went to is what, because that was the question. What are they saying? What's different? How come we still don't have an explanation from the government why Rand Paul is specifically lying?
Right.
And they said,
which, by the way, should have been on that day if he had it wrong, if he didn't know what he was talking about, according to Fauci, then Fauci should have easily been able to, on that day, tell all of America in plain English why he was wrong. He didn't do that.
No,
he still hasn't.
Right. Because, and we've seen, well, you know, technically he's right. Technically how? What is the technical in it?
Then actually, technically he's not right because it made it more dangerous to humans. That was the whole point.
Right. But it didn't make the virus more dangerous. And gain of function is technically making a human virus more lethal to a human? Is that what you're, so the technical thing is different? Is that what they were getting at? Is that to them, gain of function is not transfer. The title gain of function isn't. But the thing is that the American public was concerned with was never that you took a virus that was lethal to humans and made it more deadly, even though it'd be a concern. It was a concern that the lab leak came from manipulating from the very beginning an animal virus that would transmit to a human, which then makes that virus more dangerous to humans.
Yeah, that's the effect. Which means it fits the definition one way or the other.
Well, I think it would to most lay people because,
of course,
the conclusion is the same.
To most logical thinking people, yes. Yeah. Here's your forecast.
As we begin August, we'll see cooler temperatures for the most part for a good chunk of the U.S. Continued showers and thunderstorms for the southern plains this morning into late this afternoon will continue from Texas over to Florida and into the Carolinas, where things could get rather rocky today for some potential severe weather in the form of thunderstorms, hail, and some damaging winds. Monsoonal flow, moisture moving in from the south into Arizona and New Mexico continues today. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho will also experience rain. Burn scars in the Pacific Northwest will be especially vulnerable to flooding. Dry lightning in Oregon could initiate new fires. We're under high pressure and sunny skies for areas from the Dakotas into the Great Lakes, most of the Midwest, and into the Mid-Atlantic. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil, you get out what you put in.
Silence is violence. We're doing our part. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED Eye. You know, we talk about the employment situation out there, you and I just talking about, because we were both out of town this weekend and had similar experiences at the hotels that we stayed in. There definitely is a lack of people willing to do a ton of work. The hotel that I stayed at only cleans rooms every 5 days now.
Yeah, right.
And
so if you're only staying a night or two, you're not going to get your room clean.
No, you're not. Nope, you're not going to get your room clean. You don't have the towels in my hotel room. No toilet paper. Mm. Had to go and get toilet paper.
Right.
Had to go. You know, for example, they leave you, you know, the coffee for, you know, one night is it. Mm-hmm. So if you want more, you have to go and actually go to the office and request the coffee.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was staying in a place and Friday night, sometime after 11 p.m., the night manager just walked off the job and didn't call anybody. Next thing you know, there's a ruckus out in the hallway. Just people talking, you know, wondering what's going on. Something had happened. And eventually they had to call the police to come do a welfare check. We were all worried that somebody had become ill or something on site and they couldn't find this person. Because at that point, by the time they got there or by the time we suggested they call the police, it was after midnight. And so we don't know. You know, I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, there could be somebody laying in an office floor somewhere and we can't get to them. And so they called the police to come by and do a welfare check, and they went through the building looking for the person that was supposed to be there, and we found out the next day. I ended up going back to bed, but we found out the next day the person just walked off the job, just didn't want to do the job. But beyond that, they're having such a hard time finding people that want to do the jobs of cleaning rooms, booking managing hotels, and the service industry is right now in a situation where I don't know what the fix is, because there are a lot of like servers in restaurants. Man, if you worked in a restaurant and it was busy, and most of them were, that's not easy work to do. You're on your feet a lot. You're having to get people's orders right and do everything and work with the staff and management and all of that. And it's just a thankless job. And the idea is that you get to take home cash every day because you're working for tips primarily. Post-COVID, there are many people that don't want to go back to that line of work. I don't blame them for not wanting to do that work. It's a hard job. And I don't know that I could ever do it just mentally trying to keep up with people's orders and everything else. I don't know that I'm cut out for that. But just being on your feet all the time and that kind of work is really tough. You and I also running into the same situation when it came to the logistics of travel and the airlines. And both going out on Wednesday last week and coming home from Chicago on Saturday evening. They were short-staffed, and it was across the board. There was a McDonald's there in O'Hare. Well, there's many McDonald's in O'Hare. But the McDonald's that was closest to my gate, they were short-staffed. And the manager was clearly working hard with the two or three people maybe that were there. You had to go to the kiosk. They didn't have anybody available to take live orders. You had to go to the kiosks that were next and do the ordering through the kiosk. So your order had to be done essentially by you, and then you wait for it, which is no big deal except for the fact that it's indicative of a labor shortage. It didn't really put me out any. I was pleasantly surprised that those restaurants there in O'Hare were still open. A few of them were closed, by the way. There was a Starbucks, and think about this, a Starbucks that was closed, and they closed it like, I want to say it was about 7 p.m. They were done, and they shut up. Yeah. They shut down, and I thought to myself, well, okay, it's not because of a lack of business. That has to be because of a labor shortage or supply shortage. It could be both.
When I was at, this would be 3 weeks ago, when I was at the Buffalo airport, The majority of restaurants were closed still then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's packed. I mean, people are.
Yeah.
Right. And you're talking major chains or local chains, regional chains completely closed. And it was weird because it wasn't like you flew during the middle of COVID. Well, it was like you were flying during the middle of COVID where nobody. You know, nothing was open, but there were people in the airport and lines. You know, if you wanted coffee, the lines were 45 minutes long because so many other places were closed. Mm-hmm. And when you're speaking about, you know, transportation, this is the worst run of delays that I've ever experienced. The last eight flights that I've been on, the last eight flights over the last few months, every single one late. An hour to over 3 hours, each and every one. Yeah, and for a variety of different reasons. I mean, all the reasons are different.
Right.
You know, yesterday, crew problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what it was, but well, they didn't have the flight attendants.
Mm.
And so they were waiting for another plane to come in. Going out, it was, they claimed, an air conditioning problem where they could not cool down the plane enough because it was hot here in Texas in order for the people to get on. I never found out whether it was because they made it sound like they had a portable AC that they were using in the planes. Because I first thought, well, no, what you're using is the
APU,
the APUs that are at the gate. And he kept saying air conditioning unit, so I don't know what it was. Because I always assumed it was an APU that they used.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to go get another one. They said it's going to be a little bit. And so they finally did. And then they cooled the plane down. time before. They couldn't get the fuel into the plane.
Right.
I
ran into that a few weeks ago.
They had the fuel. They just couldn't get it into the plane.
Right. They didn't have, in my case, and this was, again, at O'Hare a few weeks ago, they didn't have enough people driving the fuel trucks to drive the fuel trucks.
Yeah. I mean, they had the gas. They just couldn't get it.
Yeah, the fuel was there, kerosene. Yes.
They just couldn't get it. They, for some reason, there was a problem. They never fully explained the problem. And then there were a couple of more. Then what was the one I had coming from Buffalo? Oh, that's right. Because this one was like
the rental car.
This is like 3 hours. Mm. No, this was the actual airplane. This was it's a logistics problem. Logistics. For 2 hours, they're telling us logistics. We don't know what that means.
Right.
We have no idea what logistics means.
More specifically, please.
Yeah, could you, what it means? It's a logistics problem with the logistics of the logistics of the logistics. Mm-hmm. And finally they came out and said, okay, we have a mechanical problem. It should be, well, then we should have said it was mechanical. And the other thing is Friday that the PA system that the agents use, they're out there trying to tell you what nobody can hear. And no one could hear what was going on.
Right.
So she's on there saying, mm-hmm. And then everybody rushes. What are you saying? What's going? And then everybody's got to pass it, you know, person by person by person to let everybody know what's going on. And I'm thinking, wow, it's such at times it can be such a cluster.
Yeah. I think right now we're seeing a number of things. The airline industry, the service industry, they're dealing with labor shortage and also supply shortage. Mm-hmm. Supply shortages have been very real for a long time. I don't know what happens in the event that parts are needed and what's going on in terms of the aviation industry. I had a family member that was part of the aviation repair industry, and that's obviously very heavily regulated, but in a time when you can't get the parts for repair because of what's going on right now. I know with Class 8 trucks, finding replacement parts, especially for older Class 8 trucks, has been extremely problematic, and the supply chain issues there are over the top. Now take into account, I don't know, how many planes that are in the air at any given time and how many planes are at every airport being used that are in service right now, and the number of them that need parts on a fairly regular basis, and just that one supply issue in and of itself, how much that would wreak havoc on travel.
And still the one thing that still drives me the most, I'm pretty good at flying because I've done it so long, and so if there's a delay, it's like, whatever, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that still irks me, and they did this the other day when I was flying out, it was like, okay, the flight, you know, the flight's hypothetically supposed to take off at 1 o'clock, and so boarding is at 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll sit there, and all of a sudden you get to, you know, 1 o'clock, and you know it still remained the same. They haven't changed anything,
right?
And then it gets to be like 2-3 minutes after, and they say, okay, the new departure time is at 1:30,
right?
But it's already 25 minutes before you're going to board. They're not even going to board. And so you know that's not going to hold. Mm-hmm. And it just frustrates the daylights out of you. I would rather them say, hey, we're delayed 90. Tell me you're delayed an extra half hour, but let me go back to a restaurant. Let me go back to the bar. Just don't keep me standing there and keep telling me where it's going to be another 20 minutes, when we know it's not going to be 20 minutes because you can't board the plane that quickly.
Right.
I don't know why that just drives me crazy.
Well, I noticed that too, and I have my app, which tells you everything in case you're not paying attention. If you're at the airport, it will tell you, hey, your plane is boarding. But then when it's delayed, all of a sudden the announcement comes on that it's been delayed, and then 15 minutes later, the app updates. And I'm like, no. That's not the purpose of an app. It's supposed to be working ahead, or at the very least, in real time. I can't imagine logistics, generally speaking, when it comes to the airline industry and what kind of a headache it is, and where all right now the voids are in terms of all the openings that are out there that people aren't filling. It includes TSA. It includes the many companies and suppliers for the airline industry, and it is, at this point, not getting better, and it likely won't until the federal money for unemployment runs out completely in every state, if that happens. I'm guessing it's going to, because I don't hear any lawmakers saying anything, but then again, we haven't approached reconciliation yet, and who knows what they might want to pile on to that, including unemployment. We already know about the child tax credit, the expansion being permanent. They want to do that. And then rental assistance. I mean, it's mind-boggling to think of how much money we could spend, or they could spend, if we let them.
I do have a TSA story also. I almost forgot about this, and this is a must-tell. Coming up, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just a quick story. Anybody who knows me, anybody who's a friend of mine, knows that whenever I travel, I tell anybody, don't give me anything to bring back. No gifts, nothing. Just I pack in a certain way. And the last time somebody gave me a gift, it was a candle. And it was like for Christmas. It was a Christmas candle. So I took it back with me, and it was sitting on top of cell phone wire. It looks like a bomb. And they pulled me over. This time, a friend of mine, because I have type 2 diabetes, so I use, you know, sweeteners and stuff in the coffee.
Right.
You shouldn't use those sweeteners. Monk fruit. Gave me a package of monk fruit to take back. And I went, no, don't give me a gift. Put it in my bag. It gets flagged. They test it, you know, the first test with the strips, whatever. It comes across as a positive. They test it twice. Comes across as a positive. They have to call the bomb squad technicians in. 35 minutes later, I'm finally leaving TSA, and they told me, don't carry stuff like this because the monk fruit always tests positive for the first
squad.
But, I mean, I'm like, whoa, what's going on? My bag's never held up. They said sweeteners can set it off. But when they brought in the bomb squad technicians and they take something, they actually pierce it. They actually pierce into it to take a test of the actual substance.
Yeah, right.
You know, inside of it. So I was intrigued by it, and you know, they could see it was a product that was bought at a store.
Yeah.
And they said, did anybody open it? And I said, no, nobody. I think it came directly from the store. And the technician told me afterward, the Bob Squad technician, he says, no. He said, this happens all the time. Just know. He goes, you know, you're going to get pulled over if you bring this through.
Almost every
time.
They pulled me aside for hand wipes.
Really?
A little travel pack of hand wipes. Yeah. At O'Hare. Not going out, but coming back. I don't know why that set it off, and they didn't swap or anything. He just reached in, saw it was hand wipes, and put it back in and said, okay, you can go. I have no idea how in the world you couldn't tell that those were hand wipes, and it was a travel pack.
Wow.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.